Thursday, December 12th, and time again for Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman, bringing you news of interest to our veterans community here in Arizona. We have news today from our normal military news websites, as well as our veteran service organizations and the Veterans Administration. So let's begin. Our first article is from Stripes.com, the official website of the Stars and Stripes newspaper, and is by Linda F. Hershey. VA must disclose delays to see a doctor and alternatives for private sector care under new legislation. This is from the 10th of December, Washington. James McCormick, an Iraq war veteran, waited 11 months to see an eye doctor at Huntington VA Medical Center in West Virginia after booking an appointment for his annual checkup in 2023. But 72 hours before McCormick's scheduled visit in April 2024, he received an automated text from the hospital canceling his appointment. There was no explanation or follow-up information to reschedule. McCormick, a 56-year-old retired Army captain who's used health care provided by the Department of Veterans Affairs for decades, said he quickly pivoted to finding a private eye doctor close to home. He saw a doctor for the same week that he made the appointment. "I'm more than willing to take my place in line for care at the Huntington VA," said McCormick, Government Affairs Director at the Vietnam Veterans of America. "I just need to know where the end of the line is. I did not get that from the VA." The Vietnam Veterans of America, which has nearly 100,000 members nationwide, is among several veterans organizations lining up to support the Complete the Mission Act, which directs the VA to disclose expected wait times for appointments, reasons for cancellations, and options to reschedule at the VA or with a non-VA clinician in the private sector. Demand for community care has been rising 15% yearly since passage of the Mission Act of 2018. About 40% of health care in 2023 was provided in the community, according to Congress. The Complete the Mission Act aims to ensure the VA is informing veterans about alternative private sector care when care at the VA is not available in a timely manner, said Representative Mike Bost, Republican of Illinois, who introduced the legislation recently. A House Veterans Affairs Committee hearing on the bill is scheduled for December 17th. The legislation would mandate the VA inform veterans seeking health care appointments about the availability of non-VA care. It also would codify existing VA standards for making referrals to non-VA care, Bost said. Bost, who's chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, said the VA needs to be more transparent with veterans about eligibility standards for health care in the private sector. Wait times for VA care must not exceed 20 days for primary care and mental health services based on VA standards. The wait for an appointment to see a VA specialist cannot exceed a month without a referral to private sector health care. The VA will cover the cost of care delivered by private clinicians who are registered with the VA healthcare network. McCormick said he not only supports the legislation because of his own frustrations trying to access routine services at the West Virginia VA hospital, but also because his organization is hearing from a growing number of Vietnam veterans with similar complaints. Veterans using VA facilities across the country are raising concerns about the appointment delays, cancellations, and other obstacles to accessing medical care in a timely manner, he said. "We need a sit-down at the dinner table discussion with the VA about why this system is not fully functioning everywhere," said McCormick, whose military career included 14 years in the Army, followed by 8 years in the Army National Guard. "Critical staff shortages at VA medical facilities are contributing to even longer waits and more cancellations," according to the House VA Committee. Under the Complete the Mission Act, veterans will be able to go online to schedule routine VA medical appointments, as well as visits with non-VA clinicians registered with the VA Community Care Network. Though veterans can now use an app to schedule many basic VA appointments, the legislation would expand those options to include more specialty areas at the VA and options for care with non-VA clinicians. The legislation also requires the VA to inform veterans about how they can appeal when the VA refuses to provide a referral for private sector care. BOST sponsored the Mission Act of 2018, which for the first time enabled veterans to see non-VA doctors when the care was not readily available at VA hospitals and clinics. The Mission Act transformed the delivery of health care to veterans across the nation, especially in rural and remote areas of the country, he said. But VA leaders have warned of the popularity of community care is shifting funds from VA facilities. Dennis McDonough, the VA secretary, said at a House hearing in May that referrals for non-VA community care need to be based on quality outcomes and not just a question of convenience. I want us to compete apple to apple with community providers. We strive to have a conversation with veterans every time they seek a referral for community care, what is available in the VA system. The VA is overutilizing community care to address veterans' health care needs rather than investing in internal capacity, said Christina Keenan, Deputy Director for National Legislative Services at the Veterans for Foreign Wars. McCormick said the VA needs to do a better job managing its existing resources. They just need to get veterans the care they need when they need it, he said. BOST's bill would require VA hospitals and clinics to inform veterans about how long they will have to wait to see a clinician prior to the appointment being booked. Facilities also would have to post their average wait times based on specialty practice. The Complete the Mission Act also would establish a uniform screening process at VA hospitals for qualifying veterans with serious mental health problems and a substance abuse disorder for inpatient care. The legislation would create a 3-year pilot program allowing veterans who've undergone the screening process to enter a private treatment program when VA care is not readily available. McCormick said it is a priority of his organization to ensure veterans receive timely and efficient care. It's vital to have a functional VA system that's uniform across the nation, he said. That's VA must disclose delays to see a doctor and alternatives for private sector care under new legislation. Our next item, Ranger Foundation sues Pentagon to have Confederate Gray Ghost put back on Fort Moore Monument. This is by Corey Dickstein of Stars and Stripes from the 11th of December, Atlanta. A foundation suing to have a Confederate officer's name reinstated to the Army's Ranger Hall of Fame and Memorial at Fort Moore, Georgia, will get the chance to make their case to a federal judge on Thursday. The hearing in Columbus, which is just outside of the Army base, will examine the merits of the National Ranger Memorial Foundation's lawsuit, which seeks to reinstate the name of Colonel John S. Mosby on the installation's Ranger Memorial and as a member of the Ranger Hall of Fame. The foundation argues in the suit, which was initially filed in September 2023, that Fort Moore officials overreached in removing Mosby's name from the memorial last year as part of a sweeping, years-long effort to strip Defense Department assets of names linked to the Confederacy. Barry Todd, the foundation's president, said base leaders overstepped their authority in removing Mosby's name. The Ranger Hall of Fame and the Ranger Memorial, he said Tuesday, are managed and overseen by private entities, including his group, which built and maintains them through private donations. The memorial was built and paid for by the Ranger community, all through donations, Todd said. The Army, in 1992 and 1993, said they would accept it as a conditional gift on the condition that they don't have to pay for it. So there's no taxpayer money at all toward the Ranger Memorial. He said the overarching view in the Ranger community is Mosby's name should remain. Fort Moore officials have said that they were simply following orders from the Pentagon when they removed Mosby's name. Justice Department lawyers representing the Pentagon in the case have moved to have the lawsuit dismissed, arguing Army officials acted lawfully and under the orders of Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin to remove all names and items associated with the Confederacy from the installation. The decision to remove Mosby's name from the Ranger Memorial, alongside three other Confederate-linked names, grew from congressional efforts to strip names and items honoring Confederates from Defense Department installations and inventory. That mandate was included in the 2021 National Defense Authorization Act, the annual law that sets Pentagon policy and spending priorities. The law established the so-called Naming Commission, which spent more than a year studying the issue and eventually called for the removal of thousands of items and the renaming of 9 Army installations, including Fort Moore, which was previously named Fort Benning in honor of Confederate Brigadier General Henry Benning. In the Commission's September 2022 report, the group identified the 4 names to be removed from the Ranger Memorial, among hundreds of other names and items to be removed at other locations at the former Fort Benning. Austin later ordered all entities within the Defense Department to implement the changes recommended by the Commission by the end of 2023. Leaders at Fort Moore, which is home to the Army's Ranger School, the 75th Ranger Regiment's headquarters, its 3rd Battalion, and the annual Best Ranger competition, said they worked for months to scrub the installation of items identified by the Naming Commission, including references to Mosby. But Todd said the Defense Department did not consider the Naming Commission's full criteria in removing Mosby's name, which the Foundation has argued was supposed to include an examination of a person's merits before and after the Civil War to determine whether items associated with their name should be removed. Todd argued, "Mosby was an honorable man, which is part of the reason that he is the only Confederate ever inducted into the Ranger Hall of Fame." Mosby was a lawyer who became a Confederate cavalry commander known as the Gray Ghost for leading daring raids on Union forces. Mosby joined the Confederate Army in 1861 out of loyalty to his family and his native state of Virginia, even after opposing secession and slavery, he claimed in his memoirs. After the Civil War, he reconciled with the U.S. government, endorsed President Ulysses S. Grant, and went on to serve as an assistant U.S. Attorney General and Grant's U.S. Consul to Hong Kong. In Mosby's post-war writings, he described slavery as a monstrous thing and wrote he had no animosity toward the northern states. Mosby was one of the initial members enshrined in the Ranger Hall of Fame when it was formed in 1992. He was inducted alongside Ranger legends such as Vietnam War Medal of Honor recipient Specialist 4th Class Robert Law, World War II heroes Major General Frank D. Merrill and Brigadier General William O. Darby, and General Creighton Abrams, who as Army Chief of Staff permanently established the 1st and 2nd Ranger Battalions in 1974. Mosby was selected for the initial Ranger Hall of Fame class because of his outstanding service to the Confederate Army as a Ranger-type leader, according to his Ranger Hall of Fame citation. His tactics in guerrilla warfare are still studied in military academies and by troops today, Todd said. Blair Brown, the National Ranger Memorial Foundation's vice president and executive director, said he expects a large turnout in support of the foundation's lawsuit in court on Thursday. Mosby was a unanimous selection into the Ranger Hall of Fame by the Ranger community, he said. This is non-biased, non-political. It is a fight for a Ranger we believe was wronged. That's Ranger Foundation sues Pentagon to have Confederate Gray Ghost put back on Fort Moore Monument. Our next article, again by Linda F. Hershey, surge in applicants strains VA jobs program for disabled veterans. This is also from the 11th of December, Washington. An historically underutilized veterans employment program with a track record of helping participants with disabilities land good-paying jobs is experiencing a surge in applicants that's creating backlogs, draining resources, and delaying benefits. Veterans organizations with members who participate in the Veterans Readiness and Employment Program run by the Department of Veterans Affairs delivered that message at a hearing Wednesday of the House Veterans Affairs Committee's subpanel on economic opportunity. The hearing examined challenges at the 10-year-old program as it experiences a surge in demand for assistance with job counselors. The program is for veterans with disabilities that are severe enough to restrict or keep them from working. More than 192,000 disabled veterans applied to the program in 2024, up from 131,000 in 2023. In 2025, officials project another 15% increase in applicants. Veterans Readiness and Employment is a transformational program that Congress must act to protect, said Julie Howell, Associate Legislative Director of Paralyzed Veterans of America. Barriers to employment still exist, which is why the VR&E program is so important. The program delivered $2.1 billion in education, job training, and other benefits in fiscal 2024. The median annual income of veterans who secure employment after completing the program is $100,000, according to program officials. Howell said while the program has successfully assisted millions of disabled veterans in the past decade, its popularity is hampering the staff's ability to provide guidance and individualized assistance. Located at 350 VA sites across the nation, the program has vocational rehabilitation specialists and job counselors who work with disabled veterans seeking employment. Disabled veterans receive help preparing for careers that they can perform with their disability. They are qualified for career counseling, job training, education assistance, and other services after an initial evaluation to assess their skills, interests, and capabilities. But more than 65% of regional VA offices have wait times of more than a month for an initial appointment, said Representative Derek Van Orden, Republican of Wisconsin, the subcommittee chairman. Van Orden, a retired Navy SEAL, identified himself as perhaps the only member of Congress to have gone through the program. I know this program inside and out. I believe the Veterans Readiness and Employment Program is headed in the wrong direction, he said. Van Orden said he is concerned the program services are diminished without the VA implementing meaningful solutions to adapt to higher participation rates. Lawmakers and veterans groups cited backlogged applications, staff shortages, and failure by counselors to respond to critical communications from colleges, job training programs, and student veterans. What should I tell my veterans who are ready to give up because they cannot get an initial appointment, said Representative Mike Levin, Democrat of California. At the regional program office in San Diego, disabled veterans wait up to 18 months for their first appointment, he said. Counselors have begun to omit their phone numbers on emails, making it difficult for college business offices and training programs to reach them, said Keith Glinderman, president of National Association of Veterans Programs Administrators, which works with colleges and universities on the approval and delivery of VA benefits. When schools cannot obtain the necessary authorization, this delays certification of benefits, he said. Glinderman said he has received reports from some students who say they have not heard from their counselors for months. Contributing to the problem is a turnover in program staff, he said. Lack of communication and constant change add stress and delay of benefits to disabled veterans who are working toward obtaining employment, Glinderman said. The program has become strained under the influx of veterans qualifying for services under the Sergeant First Class Heath Robinson, Honoring Our Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxics Act, said Nick Pamperin, the VA's program director. The PACT Act compensates veterans for illnesses and injuries caused by toxic fumes from burn pits, radiation, and contact with other hazardous substances during military service. Staffing at the Veterans Readiness and Employment Program has increased by 25% in 2 years, but job counselors continue to struggle to keep up with demand for services, Pamperin said. While expansion has helped with the response to program growth, there continues to be a need for significant resources, he said. Pamperin said the program is now automating services previously done manually and moving them online. But Howell said the VA's approach to modernizing job readiness changes with each administration. These piecemeal solutions will continue to be problematic until designing and implementing a single, fully integrated system is made a priority, he said. But Pamperin said the VA recently introduced a virtual assistant that processes signed documents in 2 days instead of the previous average of 10 days. After some initial setbacks, the VA is now piloting an online case management system that tracks benefits and points veterans to job training and education resources, he said. I know that VA states are finally on the right path with the new case management system. However, I am skeptical as this undertaking will now span the terms of 4 administrations, Van Orden said. Pamperin said making improvements with a focus on people, technology, and processes will help improve services and drive the wait times down. We absolutely need to get better, he said. Surge in applicants, strains VA jobs program for disabled veterans was the title of this article. We'll turn now to military.com for this headline. VA health system remains on federal high-risk list due to oversight shortfalls. This is by Patricia Keim of military.com from the 10th of December. Offices that monitor risk management, medical investigations, and internal audits within the Veterans Health Administration continue to miss the mark, lacking the muscle needed to improve the system overall, according to a new report from the Government Accountability Office. Since 2015, the VHA, the Department of Veterans Affairs Medical System, has been on the GAO's high-risk list, a biennial compilation that names federal programs and operations that struggle with waste, fraud, abuse, mismanagement, or needs transformation. This year, the VHA was again placed on the list over concerns with the offices tasked with oversight of the system, which serves 9 million veterans in 170 medical centers and more than 1,000 clinics. According to the GAO, the VHA mainly has struggled to implement the goals it set when reorganizing its oversight offices this year, including the one responsible for reviewing investigations into alleged medical malpractice and providing recommendations to improve system-wide safety. In 2024, VHA reorganized to eliminate overlap and fragmentation of responsibilities across its oversight offices, GAO analysts wrote in their report released Monday. Among other things, the reorganization highlighted VHA's need for a workforce plan. Having a plan would help ensure these offices have the staff they need to understand what's working within the health system and manage any remaining risks. But the GAO also acknowledged that department has improved immensely in the past decade in its efficiency and providing services to veterans. It's been nearly a decade since we added VA healthcare to GAO's high-risk list, and in those intervening years, VHA has taken important steps to improve its oversight of its vast healthcare system, the analysts wrote. The GAO found that the department's Committee for Audit, Risk, and Compliance, which reviews findings from investigations into adverse medical events and alleged malpractice, did not regularly perform its duties or provide system-wide improvement recommendations, a shortcoming that could undermine the quality of care at VA health facilities, according to the GAO. The report also noted that the department's Office of Integrity and Compliance has not implemented what are considered to be the best practices for risk identification and management across its healthcare system. By taking additional steps to fully meet leading practices, VHA can better respond to risks that could potentially interfere with the timeliness and quality of veterans' healthcare, the GAO analysts wrote. In the department's Office of Internal Audit, established in 2016, after the GAO first put the VHA on the high-risk list, struggles as a result of what the government watchdog described as an unclear reporting structure and oversight role. By clearly defining its purpose, VHA can better ensure its Office of Internal Audits used effectively, such as to provide VHA leadership information on trends and emerging issues, they wrote. The VHA was put on the list in 2015, largely as the result of issues with providing timely, quality health care to veterans. That year, the GAO made more than 100 recommendations to improve the administration. This year, the number of GAO's recommendations has dwindled to 4. They include developing a workforce plan for oversight offices, improving practices for managing risks, defining the purpose of the VA's internal audit efforts, and taking care to ensure that findings from medical investigations and other assessments are used for potential system-wide improvements. In a letter to the GAO, VA Chief of Staff Meg Cabot said the department concurred with the recommendations and would complete three of the four in 2025, with the last, the portion regarding risk management, occurring by September 2027. According to Cabot, the VA plans to implement a multi-year process to incorporate a wide range of best practices into the risk framework proposal for the VHA. That's VA Health System remains on federal high-risk list due to oversight shortfalls. Next, from military.com, we have Army cuts popular education benefit in half, bars officers as costs soar. This is from the 11th of December by Steve Bannon of military.com. The Army is dramatically scaling back one of its most generous education benefits, the Credentialing Assistance Program, known as Army CA, in a bid to rein in costs that could be one of the most consequential shifts in soldiers' benefits in years. Introduced force-wide in 2020, Army CA was hailed as a groundbreaking complement to traditional scholarship programs and offers soldiers $4,000 annually to pursue civilian credentials in fields like cybersecurity coding, personnel training, and commercial driving. The credentials were designed to bolster both military careers and civilian transitions. But now the Army said it's slashing the benefit in half, reducing it to $2,000 annually, a move that could feel even more painful given the rampant inflation since the program's launch and swiftly rising costs for education. The benefit cap will also be reduced to one credentialing course per year and no more than three courses in a decade. While recertifications won't count toward the annual course limit, they will still be deducted from the overall financial cap, service officials with direct knowledge explained. The changes we're making to these programs will help ensure their long-term sustainability, Dr. Agnes Garabin Schaefer, the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Manpower and Reserve Affairs, told Military.com in a statement. Finally, officers will no longer be eligible. Some Army officials with direct knowledge of the planning said these cohorts of troops are already beneficiaries of numerous education opportunities, and when adjusting the program for it to make financial sense, enlisted troops have by far the most difficulty transitioning into civilian careers after service, and thus would benefit the most. Officers and warrants made up 20% of the 27,000 Army CA users this year, according to data provided by the service. Since its launch 4 years ago, more than 64,000 soldiers have taken advantage of Army credentialing assistance. Its popularity has surged dramatically, with costs soaring from $31 million in 2021 to $70 million on this year. Army Secretary Christine Wormuth, when asked about potential cuts by lawmakers in April after Military.com's reporting, characterized the program as a catastrophic success, referring to concerns that it was so popular its use blew past what the Army was budgeting to spend on benefits and that the program was effectively unlimited and without the guardrails most incentives have. Meanwhile, the Army is boosting the funds for annual tuition assistance, which is more for traditional college, from $4,000 to $4,500, bringing it to parity with what other services pay for. The Army spends about $230 million each year on that benefit. Tuition assistance is separate from the GI Bill, which is a benefit managed by the Department of Veterans Affairs and is unaffected and would require an act of Congress to change. That's Army cuts popular education benefit in half, bars officers as costs soar. You're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader and Flagstaff, Chuck Kaufman. Remember, you can listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming streaming on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org. Additionally, Sun Sounds is available on the new Sun Sounds of Arizona app that you can download from the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store for your iPad, iPhone, or Android phone or tablet. We'll turn now to one of our Veteran Service Organizations publication, the American Legion Magazine, for this article by Stephen B. Brooks, More Than a Game, for former Army-Navy game participants, students, veterans, and fans. America's game is college football's oldest and most meaningful rivalry. Clint Bruce served as a Navy SEAL before going on to a successful career as an entrepreneur and businessman, but neither time nor a busy life after graduating from the U.S. Naval Academy in 1997 has dimmed his memories of his football career with the midshipmen, especially 4 losses, all still painful, and they come up without prompt when talking with Bruce about the Army-Navy game presented by USAA, of which the American Legion begins its multi-year associate sponsorship in 2024. We lost all 4, said Bruce, who was the MVP on a 9-3 team in 1996 when he amassed 125 tackles. Let's go ahead and get that out, and 2 of them were my fault. I just missed tackles, over-pursued, general aggressive driven mistakes. When passion trumps process, you find yourself out of position. Army outscored Navy by 9 points over the 4 losses. Bruce's final game against Army was a 28-24 loss in 1996. I think it was probably the last one out of the locker room after that loss, said Bruce, who had 328 tackles over his career and is considered one of the best linebackers in U.S. Naval Academy history. I don't think I took my helmet off for maybe 45 minutes after the game. I didn't have anything else, and I was actually picked up off the field by some of the Army offensive linemen. It was this, hey, we'd go to war with you any day. Showed mutual respect, and little did we know that in a few years we would go to war together. The American Legion is the first veteran service organization to sponsor the Army-Navy game, and for Bruce and other veterans of the game itself, as well as those who attended either of the 2 service academies, the historic series is much more than a game. One of the reasons I wanted to go to the Naval Academy was the Army-Navy game, Bruce said. I grew up kind of having a reverence for it. No one had to tell me how important it was, but as prepared for it as you think you are, the first time you step on the field for it, you understand the significance of it. Without trivializing the institution of marriage at all, it's like the difference between being engaged and being married. If you're engaged and you mean it in your mind, you're pretty much married. But when you're married, there's just a difference in the significance of it. Remembering the loss. Over a 6-year NFL career, Phil McConkie caught 67 passes and had more than 3,000 return yards, but he is best remembered for his performance in Super Bowl XXI after the Giants' 1986 season, helping lead the team to a 39-20 win over the Denver Broncos. In the game's second half, McConkie caught a touchdown, set up another with a 44-yard reception, and put the Giants in position for a field goal with a 25-yard punt return. What sticks most with McConkie, though, is a play earlier in the game when he was tripped on a pass route and didn't draw a penalty. I think about that more than I think about my touchdown, said McConkie, who graduated from the Naval Academy in 1979 after setting records for season and career touchdown receptions. Over those 4 years, Navy went 3-1 against Army, but just like his Super Bowl, McConkie's memory of 1977, a 17-14 loss, burns brighter than a record-setting career. All these years later, I barely think of the 3 wins, he said. It's the 1 loss. That still eats at me. I think that's the common denominator with competitors. You hate to lose a hell of a lot more than you like to win. 3 big wins over Army. I barely think about that. It's the 1 we lost. Yet that loss proved a stepping stone for the 1978 season when Navy was ranked as high as 11th, went 9-3, and upset Brigham Young in the Holiday Bowl, the program's first bowl appearance since the 1964 Cotton Bowl. That really was impetus for us because we said we never want to experience this again, McConkie said of the 1977 loss. It left such a horrible taste in our mouths that we did everything we could to avoid that. Lessons learned. In 2009, Trent Steelman won the quarterback position as a freshman, making him the only plebe in U.S. Military Academy history to accomplish that feat. In all, he rushed for 45 touchdowns and more than 3,300 yards, and became the only Army quarterback to throw for more for 2,000 yards in a career. Army was 0-4 against Navy during Steelman's 4 years, but the final two games were close, 27-21 and 17-13. In the latter, the Black Knights had driven to the Navy 14-yard line in the final minutes, but a fumble on a handoff gave the ball and the game to Navy. In terms of my sports career, specifically my football career, is one of the most pivotal moments I've ever been in, Steelman said. For me, it wasn't necessarily the defeat in that moment. I think it was just the accumulation of everything my class and I had been through and worked toward. We could feel that gap being closer every year. I think there was a sense that we were gaining on the momentum of beating our Navy and rising to the cream of the crop of the service academies. At the end of the day, I know I gave everything I had to the program and to the game of football. It always gave me a sense of peace knowing that the lessons learned from the outcome are far greater than the more in-the-moment ones, as long as one of them was Army. While rushing for an NCAA Football Bowl subdivision record, 2,017 yards, and passing for another 1,084 his senior season, quarterback Malcolm Perry led Navy to a school record 11 wins in 2019. But what mattered most to Perry, who later played in the NFL and now is a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps studying to be a drone pilot, was the final win of the regular season, a 31-7 victory over Army. He rushed for an Army-Navy game record 304 yards that day. Going into that season, that was my number one goal, Perry said. Everything that led up to winning 11 games was driven by the fact that I wanted to be good enough to beat Army that year. That was my goal my senior year. I didn't want to leave the academy without beating those guys. It's bred into you at the academy to beat Army, and we hadn't done it yet. Whether we won 2 games or 11, as long as one of them was Army, was my goal that year. The streak ends. When Army Captain Quinn Doherty stepped onto the USMA campus as a plebe in 2013, its football team had lost 11 straight games to Navy. That streak extended 3 more years while Doherty was in school. It was tough, Doherty said. Army-Navy is a great time, but when you lose, it's horrible. That changed in 2016 when Army won 21-17 on its way to a bowl game appearance. Army won when I was in first grade and didn't win again until I was a senior in college, Doherty said. My best friends are watching right next to me, and we stormed the field. My phone fell out of my uniform. Someone found it and called my brother and gave it to him. To this day, I don't know who that was. You're seeing 3-star generals running around like children because they can't believe Army has won. I watched the highlights of that game, and to this day, I get emotional. I was with my friends. My family was there. Winning for the first time since 2001 was a crazy experience. Something else stands out from that day, too. We were all on the field, and Navy was singing Navy Blue and Gold first because they'd lost, Doherty said, and every single cadet, every single Army fan on the field in the middle of absolute pandemonium stopped and stood at attention and was silent until they were done. And then we all went nuts again. Currently stationed at the Department of Defense's Language Institute, Foreign Language Center in Monterey, California, Doherty deployed to Iraq in 2018 when the Army won for the third straight year. My company commander was a grad. My battalion commander was a grad. My brigade commander was a grad, he said. Another lieutenant and I were going to get promoted, and we decided to do it on the day of Army-Navy. The game started at 10 or 11 at night, local time, so we're up watching the game on the rooftop of one of the buildings of this post in Iraq, just hanging out and having a good time. There's that kind of camaraderie that comes with it as well. Bouncing back in a big way. In his junior season, Navy running back Napoleon McCallum amassed 2,385 all-purpose yards and finished sixth in the Heisman Trophy race. But two games into his senior year, a broken leg forced him to redshirt that season. Navy, which had been 2-0-1 against Army in the three previous seasons, lost to the Black Knights 28-11 while McCallum looked on. "I felt helpless," he said of the 1984 Army-Navy game. "I couldn't do anything. I watched the guys I played with play the last game and was rooting for them. At the time, I knew I was able to come back the next year, so in my mind, I'm like, I'm going to make sure I beat them in my senior year." McCallum was true to his word, running for 219 yards as Navy upset an 8-2 Army squad 17-7. "That's the game you want to win," he said. "I wanted to win bad, real bad. You put it all out on the line. It's just a fantastic rivalry with great people who are doing great things in our country." The game that almost wasn't. With Heisman Trophy winner Roger Staubach at quarterback, Navy's 1963 squad went 9-1 and reached number 2 in the nation before losing 28-6 to number 1 Texas in the Cotton Bowl to determine the national championship. But that year's Army-Navy game almost didn't happen. On November 22nd, President John F. Kennedy was assassinated, and the Army-Navy game would fall within the military's 30-day national period of mourning. "Initially, the game was canceled," said Thomas Lynch, a retired Rear Admiral and former U.S. Naval Academy superintendent, who was a linebacker for and captain of the 63 squad. A few days later, they said, Jackie Kennedy said the president would have wanted the game to be played. So it was delayed to December 7th. We beat them 21-15, and what was special was that Kennedy had commanded PT boats in World War II, so we felt like he was one of ours. And that article was More Than a Game. The Army-Navy game participants, students, veterans, and fans. America's game is college football's oldest, most meaningful rivalry. An article by Stephen B. Brooks in the American Legion magazine. Well, let's turn now to news.va.gov for these updates from the Veterans Administration. Our first item is from the 6th of December. VA raises the bar on care for women veterans. Results of the study for barriers to care. The Barriers to Women's Veterans to VA Healthcare 2024 report examines the input of over 7,000 women veterans and shows that women are happier with VA healthcare than ever before. This comprehensive study provides crucial insights into your experiences, and it highlights both our successes and areas where we can do better. Key highlights from the survey results. Safety and comfort. 83% of women veterans who use VA feel safe and comfortable at VA facilities. Since 2014, we've made notable strides to improve VA facilities, resulting in a significant satisfaction increase from women veterans. Facility cleanliness and equipment are up by 10%, accessible parking by 17%, safe parking by 8%, privacy at check-in by 8%, and welcoming waiting areas by 9%. Provider satisfaction. 82% of women veterans who use VA are pleased with their VA provider and feel respected by their primary care providers, specialists, nurses, and office staff. Most notably, satisfaction with general medical knowledge has risen from 79% in 2014 to 86% in 2024, likely due to the success of our VA Women's Health Mini-Residency Program. VA has trained over 11,500 VA providers specifically in women veterans care. Through this training, providers are able to better serve women veterans with gender-specific care, including reproductive health, gynecology, breast health, and cancer screening, maternity care, and more. Sense of belonging. 74% of women veterans who use VA feel a strong sense of belonging at VA. Women veterans' strong sense of belonging is a positive reflection of VA's commitment to creating an inclusive environment and increasing women's specific communications over the past 10 years. VA women's health care-related campaigns and materials consider the diverse needs of women veterans and emphasize that VA provides personalized health care to meet each woman's individual needs. This includes access to trauma-informed care and options in how they receive their care, such as requesting a provider of a certain gender, private waiting rooms, telehealth options, chaperones during appointments, and more. Additionally, communications continue to include culture change campaigns to highlight VA's approach and services around topics important to women veterans, including gender-based harassment, suicide prevention, diversity and inclusion, Women's History Month, and more. While these results are encouraging, we recognize that there are still areas where we need to focus our efforts. You identified several barriers to care, which we are actively addressing and improving. Understanding benefits and health care, 37% and reported not understanding benefits, and 27% reported not having enough information on how to use VA health care. VA is committed to empowering you with information regarding your healthcare options. Our monthly health and culture change campaigns, Women's Veterans Call Center, and the Center for Women Veterans newsletters are designed to keep you informed and engaged. Additionally, local VA facilities offer specialized support through Women Veterans Program Managers, Maternity Care Coordinators, and LGBTQ+ Care Coordinators. Expanded access to care. About 1 in 4 women have switched to a non-VA provider due to limited hours, and over half of those of you who use VA say extended hours would be helpful. We understand the importance of convenient care options. Many VA facilities have extended weekday and weekend hours. For added flexibility, we encourage the use of telehealth appointments to make it easier to receive care without the need for travel. Family needs. For those of you with children needing care, 40% said it was difficult to find childcare and 46% had canceled a medical appointment in the past 12 months because of this. Recognizing the challenges of balancing childcare with medical appointments, VA is enhancing support through the Deborah Sampson Act of 2021, ensuring additional childcare support to help you manage family responsibilities while accessing essential healthcare services. Our commitment to you. We are committed to making significant improvements to ensure that you have the support you need and more options than ever before. Our services and resources continually expand each year. Enhanced women veterans health care includes expanded services, increased availability of extended hours, child care, health, telehealth, home care, medical equipment, mail order prescriptions, and transportation. Comprehensive care. Access to personalized services such as primary care, gynecology, reproductive health, maternity care, mental health, specialty care, and cancer screenings. Women providers. Enhanced access to women's health providers and women-only clinics with options to request a specific gendered provider. Safety and respect. A respectful environment with practices like medical chaperones and accommodating specific requests to ensure safety and comfort. Mental health support. Access to women's mental health champions, counseling, support groups, and 24/7 confidential support through the Veterans Crisis Line. You can dial 988 and press 1. Increased communication. Improved access to information via the Women Veterans Call Center, 1-855-VA-WOMEN, the Center for Women Veterans Newsletters, womenshealth.va.gov, veteran service organizations, and direct messaging with VA healthcare teams. Thank you to the thousands of women veterans who provided feedback. You are helping VA shape the future of women's healthcare. Visit the Women's Health webpage or call 1-855-VA-WOMEN for personalized assistance with eligibility, enrollment, and VA women's health care and benefits. This item from news.va.gov can be located by searching for health or in top stories or women veterans. And there are a number of links in this article to get you to the services that you need. This article was VA Raises the Bar on Care for Women Veterans. Next, from the 5th of December, we have Your Say, Proposed Changes to VA Caregiver Support Program. Your feedback is important in shaping the final rule. VA values the contributions of caregivers and veterans in our community. We recently published a notice of proposed rulemaking in the Federal Register, proposing updates to expand access to the Program of Comprehensive Assistance for Family Caregivers, or PCAFC. Please note that these changes are not yet in effect, and your feedback is important in shaping the final rule. Key highlights of the proposed changes. Although these changes are not yet in effect, the proposed updates aim to improve the PCAFC and provide more families with the support they need. The proposed rule would, first, expand eligibility. A broader definition of serious injury could allow more veterans and caregivers to qualify for support. Add telehealth flexibility. VA seeks to offer telehealth home visits during certain types of emergencies. Extend delay in discharges based on reassessments. This proposed rule would delay discharges based on eligibility reassessments for legacy participants, legacy applicants, and their family caregivers for an additional 18 months after the effective date of a final rule. The delay in discharges is currently slated to expire in September 2025. VA's suspension of required annual reassessments, including legacy reassessments, remains in place at this time. Require fewer reassessments. Under the proposed rule, VA would reassess eligibility less frequently, lowering the burden for veterans and their families. And then finally, clarify eligibility. New criteria would expand and clarify the basis on which a veteran may be determined in need of personal care services for 6 continuous months. How you can get involved. The 60-day public comment period begins tomorrow, offering you the opportunity to share your thoughts and experiences. We encourage veterans, caregivers, and everyone involved in their care to review the proposed changes and provide feedback. Your input is crucial. Every commitment will be carefully reviewed to inform the final rulemaking. Remember, these are only proposed changes, and your voice can help shape the final rule. You can get more information about PCAFC by going to caregiver.va.gov and check out the Frequently Asked Questions document for more information about the proposed rule. We are listening closely to veterans, caregivers, veteran service organizations, and other stakeholders as we consider changes to PCAFC, including changes to eligibility. Your feedback is essential in refining these updates and improving the Program of Comprehensive Assistance for Family Caregivers, said Dr. Colleen Richardson, Executive Director of the Caregiver Support Program. About the Caregiver Support Program, or CSP. The Caregiver Support Program enhances the health and well-being of caregivers of veterans through education, resources, and services. Every VA facility has a CSP team that offers vital information to keep caregivers informed and support. You can visit CSP's website, and again, that's caregiver.va.gov, or contact your local CSP team to learn more. Discover CSP's 2023 highlights in last year's annual report. That article was Have Your Say, Proposed Changes to VA Caregiver Support Program. Our final item for today is Breathe Easier, COPD Awareness for Veterans. COPD is about managing your health before symptoms worsen. This article is from the 10th of December by Hans Peterson, the VHA News editor and Air Force veteran. Imagine feeling winded after taking just a few steps. For many veterans with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD, this is an everyday reality. COPD affects millions of Americans. Veterans can face unique risks for the disease due to military exposures to dust, fumes, and chemicals during service. Currently, COPD is one of more than 24 presumed conditions related to the PACT Act. It's important to remember that COPD isn't just about difficulty breathing, it's about managing your health before symptoms worsen. Early detection and why it matters. might be easy to dismiss symptoms like shortness of breath after going up the stairs, or a lingering cough that just doesn't go away, or wheezing after simple activities as part of aging or related to general fatigue. But what may seem like minor inconveniences could be your body's way of signaling an underlying condition and could be early warning signs of COPD. Chronic bronchitis and emphysema, two common types of COPD, can make you work harder to breathe, especially when you're active and need to breathe faster. With chronic bronchitis, cells in airways produce more mucus than normal, and this buildup can cause inflammation, impacting air travel in and out of your lungs. For those with emphysema, damaged or weakened airways affect oxygen travel throughout your body, making it harder to breathe. Catching and addressing symptoms early can make all the difference. Detecting and treating a disease early can help slow progression and greatly improve your quality of life. When you seek medical attention for issues that can be easy to dismiss, you pave the way for better health, more energy, and greater well-being. VA resources and support for veterans with COPD. Cutting-edge screenings, treatments, and pulmonary care specifically tailored for veterans are available through VA health care. Telehealth services make it even easier to access care from home, and new innovations in telepulmonology and telespirometry care have started making lung function testing easier to access as well. With lifestyle adjustments, exercise programs, and breathing techniques, in-person and virtual resources are here to help you stay active and reclaim control over your breathing if you have COPD. Join VA in raising awareness, educating yourself and others, taking advantage of resources to keep your lungs healthy. Don't let COPD hold you back. Reach out today for screenings and support and take control of your lung health. And that's Breathe Easier, COPD Awareness for Veterans. Well, that wraps up this week's edition of Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman, reminding you you can listen to the Sun Sounds of Arizona stream on your Amazon Echo or Dot device.